If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports game world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinion. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Christian. Well, all right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, February 21st, 2014. Hello, everybody. Welcome, as always. Thank you so much for listening. We have another great show for you this week, so let's get right into it. Moving from left to right on your radio, up first, we have a woman who is struggling with Olympic hockey rebroadcast schedule shuffling and spoilerific push notifications. My friend from many publications, Kat Bailey. Kat, welcome back to the show.
I may or may not have rescheduled an appointment just so that I could watch USA versus Canada on Friday.
Ah, smart. Yeah, I'm actually devastated that I will not be able to watch that live. Although
exciting
I will.
Exciting times.
Yes, great game today, beating the Czechs. Terrific game. Yeah, there's really nothing better than Olympic hockey, I think, anyway.
Yeah, that makes me wonder why they don't expand the size of the rinks in the NHL as well, because it makes for a more entertaining game, I feel.
It's the seats. They would lose the seats, lose the revenue, and they...
Yeah, I know, but more entertaining product maybe means bigger TV contract, maybe means more money, you don't have to rely on gate revenue.
You can dream. Speaking of dreaming, up next, a man who is about to blow the lid on the sham of barbecue restaurants in Oklahoma in their name, with Oklahoma in their name, that do not serve fried okra. From Operation Sports, the executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome to the show.
You know, I can't really speak on this because there's a lot of people in Kansas City that really do swear by that place. But I'm telling you, it was a sham. It was a sham of a restaurant. The barbecue was good. It was really good. It really was. But man, it just was not at the level of what I'm used to here in Oklahoma City. So I don't want to say Kansas City barbecue might be a little overrated, but I think it gets a little bit too much praise for, what I'm used to down here.
So all I know, saying. I learned something this week, which is no fried okra, no Oklahoma.
It's true. It's true. That's very true.
Up next, a man who penned the next great Twitter high fantasy novel immediately after suffering through a particularly heinous NC State loss. From Kotaku, the author of Stick Jockey, Owen Good. Owen, welcome back to the show.
Rich, I mean, I appreciate that. I'm really trying to be good-natured about this, but it just hauls up so much bad memories. And tonight, we're recording this on Wednesday night.
Yes.
Listeners, you'll hear it on Friday, but tonight, Boston College, a team with six wins, defeated Syracuse. And I hope you enjoy it, Eagles, because you have taken what is rightfully ours.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but I couldn't help it after reading what you wrote afterwards. It was probably...
Yeah, I'm sorry, to put a finer point on it, for those who don't... There was the mythology of the orcs was from the back of a Dungeons & Dragons manual. I believe it was Unearth Arcana. Submit, are you with me on that? I do feel it is the truth. I think NC State, I think we are the orcs of the ACC. I think that we inhabit a realm that the better looking races, the Tar Heels and the elvish Duke Blue Devils and everybody else sought to cheat us of, and it resonates. I'll put it that way.
Up next, a man for whom the simultaneous release of the Titanfall beta and a new full season of House of Cards caused him to go into a state of utter paralysis. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
I actually prioritized Titanfall, amazingly enough, because it was a limited beta, right? It was only from the 14th through the 19th. And, you know, House of Cards, 13 episodes or whatever, they're not going anywhere. So... I took the opportunity to get my girlfriend into the show. She's not someone who is interested in political dramas at all, really. But she started watching the first episode and like blew through the first season in 2 or 3 days. And now she's actually, as we're recording this podcast, watching the second season, the first episode without me because she's so into it.
Well done, sir. Well done. And I am your host, Rich Grisham. As always, again, thank you, everybody, for listening, for joining us. Lots of stuff to talk about. Before we get into the first topic, which is going to be MLB The Show, and we got some other stuff coming down the pike, including RBI Baseball, NASCAR 14, some great listener questions. Real quick, a bunch of folks have said, hey, what happened to what you've been playing? The segment we so blatantly lifted from One Up Yours, and Weekend Confirmed. So let's go around the table real quick and let's just talk a little bit about what we've been playing. We've obviously touched on a little bit. We'll start with you, Sumit. I presume you you just said it. You've been playing some Titanfall. Give us your 60-second recap on your Titanfall experience.
Man, I rarely, very, very rarely pre-order games. The last one I did was GTA 5, and the last one before that, I honestly can't remember. But I will be pre-ordering Titanfall. That beta was... awesome. I'd played it at PAX Prime once before, a couple of rounds there, but to get online with, you know, fellow Polygon folks and randos was just so great. Even limited, it was 2 maps, a few different modes, and the level cap was 14, and I hit that in like the first 3 or 4 hours of playing last week. Even so, it's just... if you haven't played it and you're wondering, you know, what's so cool about it, like why are people talking about it, it's the movement. I've never played a shooter in which you can move like the way you can move in Titanfall. It's just so fast and so easy. Like you're just using the sticks and pressing A and you can do like all this crazy stuff. It's like just moment to moment, you know, running around that world, flying around, wall running, wall jumping. And that's, of course, I haven't even mentioned the Titans. The Titans are incredible as well. And there's so many different things you can do. There's, what's really great, this is the last thing I'll say, is that there's plenty to do for entry-level players. You can have a lot of fun, A, before you even step in a Titan, and B, you know, even when you do... you may not be very good, but you can still, you know, mess up some dudes on the other team. But even in my limited time with the beta, I could see that there's so much potential for high level play. And even like, you know, I played last Thursday and Friday and was doing pretty well, and then jumped on like Sunday night and was getting worked over. Like it was clear that people who had been playing all weekend, you know, already had sort of reached a new level of skill. So I can't wait to see everyone when the full game comes out on the 11th.
Cat Bailey, I presume Titanfall is high on your list of what you've been playing as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I got into the beta and it brings me back to Halo. I don't know. I haven't had that feeling in quite a long time. Just that feeling of total freedom of movement, the way that it plays. But at the same time, I feel it feels more accurate. It feels more down to earth. I like the weapon choice better. And it's the rare FPS where even if I'm doing really badly, and I usually didn't do too well. Usually I'd be around the middle of the pack or below average. I would somehow feel like I was doing really well. Like I would feel like I'm doing a lot because I'd be shooting grunts or running around in my Titan. And every match had at least one memorable moment in it. My only concern is that because of the nature of the way that Titans are timed out, that the flow of the battles will start to feel a tiny bit repetitive after a while. And that if the maps aren't balanced properly in the final version, whichever team manages to win the first round with their Titans will proceed to roll the other team and win. We'll see. But very promising game. I'm really looking forward to the final release.
Owen, good. Titanfall for you as well, I presume?
Yes, I got in on the beta when it was made available to Xbox One subscribers, and I am not an FPS gamer. I play them, obviously, but I'm not one of the cognoscenti. But even so, the game's balance, I think, is readily apparent even to a guy like me. What's the force field where you collect the other guy's bullets and then throw them back at the guy? I do that a lot. I spam that a lot. And I think that thought applies to what Respawn is trying to do, which is to have a game that is very well balanced and accommodating for all playing types, but, you know, without obviously biasing it toward one or dumbing it down and making it so inclusive it's just a Trivial Pursuit. You know, I had a lot of fun running around in it, and I had a lot of fun running around in it and going, oh, hell, what am I supposed to do here? And just sort of defaulting to some kind of panicked controls as a non-experienced FPS player and still having, you know, what I felt was a deterministic time, which is like, okay, I'm in charge here. This is the defense that I choose to employ, and, you know, when I exhaust that, because obviously these things run out, you know, this is what I'll do when I'm done. It is again, I still lack, I think, the innate minimap awareness that even a noob FPS gamer needs. But the game's balance, inclusiveness, and just the fact, I mean, when you're in a Titan, and you sort of feel like, okay, now I am supremely awesome, and you realize how long it takes for your weapons to develop and to inflict their damage, you get a very powerful sense of the balance of this game. Whereas when you're a pilot and you're running around on the ground with your sidearm and it auto locks on and, you know, does damage very quickly, you understand this is a very well thought out game. It is conspicuously well designed, and I can't express my admiration for it enough. And that's just in the beta, so I will be playing this fully when it arrives in full release.
So as I thought, I would be the only weirdo because I played multiple hours of Titanfall and have absolutely no desire to ever play it again. Not because it isn't a full, not because they don't display a wonderful technical prowess. Not because the game doesn't look good or anything. Not because it doesn't succeed in what it's trying to do. Clearly, it does that. It's just that I have gotten to a point in my life where the hooks and appeal of a online first-person shooter do not work for me whatsoever. Like, I get in, I start playing, and I immediately recognize that everybody else knows more about what's going on than I do. And I have no real desire to figure it out. And I don't, I used to, not that long ago, play online first-person shooters all the time. And maybe years from now I will again. But the combination of recognizing very quickly that unless I were to play this game on a near daily basis, there would be virtually no fun for me to be had, as well as the fact that the way that Titanfall is set up to make you want to keep coming back in the form of perks and new weapons and stuff doesn't mean anything to me. Like, the type of persistence that Titanfall presents is not what appeals to me. Like, I've gotten to the point where what appeals to me as a person who plays games is the persistency of, like, our online sports leagues, which I just love, the persistency of a good story, and the fact that I can put a game down for 2 or 3 months and come back to it and not just be have been completely passed by a community. So I respect the game tremendously, but it has zero appeal for me, and I'll be skipping it when it comes out.
But Rich, if maybe I can put a sports point on this. I mean, obviously, I mean, what you spoke to is correct. This is a multiplayer shooter, and it is multiplayer only. I mean, there's a narrative mode, which I guess we've yet to see how that's weaved in. But, you know, map knowledge is key. And what other game do we might play a lot of where knowledge of the course and how to play the course is key? It's golf. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the same thing. I mean, you're right that yeah, it's going to take a lot of time input. And I understand, you know, your frustration and how you feel like, you know, well, all these guys, I just got in on the beta and then so-and-so here is already level 30 or whatever.
Yep.
And it'll take, you know, me doing nothing but playing this game for a solid week to rise to that level. But you know, I feel like, you know, if we respect, say, the challenge or the knowledge that you must acquire in a sports video game such as, well, who's on the defense in Madden? You know, who am I facing tonight in NHL?
Yep.
You know, what is the what's the opposing matchup in MLB? What's the course in Tiger Woods? And how am I going to play that? Does it have an undulating green versus a flat one? That's somewhat the same thing with Titanfall, which is you just got to get to know the playing field. And I don't mind that it has a divergent playing field, and you just, yeah, you put in the work and you will reap the rewards.
Kat? And unlike Madden, a round in Titanfall does not last 45 minutes. It lasts, about 10 minutes. Well, and yeah, it goes by so fast, and it's so exciting and exhilarating that you think, wow, that was great. I really want to do it again. And that's one of the reasons that I'm excited for Titanfall, because as much as I like Battlefield, it's always kind of annoyed me that the maps can take upwards of an hour to complete. And I don't really like losing my entire afternoon to a first-person shooter, or any game for that matter, anymore. So it's nice to be able to feel like I can just sit down and spend like half an hour with Titanfall and really get a good experience out of it.
Submit.
Well, I think to your point, Rich, you know, this ties into both sports games and what I was saying earlier, which is like, yeah, I noticed a difference in playing, you know, last week versus Sunday night in terms of the opposition I was facing, right? Like, it was clear to me that these people had gotten better in that short span. But I think the way I play sports games, the way a lot of us play sports games online, is probably going to be the way to play Titanfall for guys like us. Which is to say, you play with your friends. You know, I think in a game like Titanfall, teamwork is key. There was one point where I was able to play a game, because it's 6v6. It was like me and five other Polygon folks in a party, and you know, we would just play other teams with all, you know, all six of us against the other team. And so I think when I play Madden online, I don't just play randos unless I'm, you know, reviewing the game, because it's not fun. I get destroyed most of the time. And so I think if, you know, you could find a good group of friends to play Titanfall with, Rich, then you might have a good time.
Yeah, I'm absolutely not disparaging the game. Everyone I know that I have talked to about Titanfall loves it. So clearly it's just that its appeals, or, you know, the fundamental aspects of the game that appeal to so many people do not appeal to me. And what's interesting, if you juxtapose it against the other game that I have been playing and I recently finished, which is Spec Ops The Line. Spec Ops The Line is a bloodbath of a shooter where you slaughter waves and waves and waves of dudes. But the story is, to me, by far the most interesting story I've ever played in a first-person shooter. Of the way that music is used to project a theme, the way that certain scenes are presented, the amazing visual representation of Dubai. I mean, it's an amazing experience. And while I had a lot of issues with some of the stuff in the game, I came away with it feeling like I just experienced something. Whereas when I play Titanfall, I feel like I just dumped into an arena and shooting dudes. And that's okay for everybody but me. It just doesn't work for me. But enough about that. Chris Sanner, what you been playing?
I'd like to first off welcome everybody to the Press Row Podcast, where we talk about sports games and sports games and sports games. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually watching Olympic hockey. I got in the mood to play a little bit of NHL this week.
That's really, yeah.
With everything that's been going on, I haven't had, just traveling, my wife transitioning jobs, that sort of thing. I haven't had as much time to game, but that's okay because this is the kind of time of year where sports gaming isn't really a priority. But man, I was looking, we were assigning reviews this week. There are so many games coming out in the spring that just little knick-knack games too. And oh, I'm so ready. And I've been playing a bunch of mobile stuff as well. And I promise you guys, like, this could be a pretty good year for us as far as things to talk about and such. There's just a lot of really nice games coming up, and I'm really excited.
I wholeheartedly agree. And one of those really nice games or sets of games that's coming out, which everybody wants to know about, is MLB The Show. Since we last spoke, the game's release dates have been announced. The PS3 and the Vita versions will be coming out on April 1st. And the PS4 version will be coming out at some point in May. Good. Are you disappointed? Are you surprised? Or is this what you expected? Your initial thoughts on the sort of the staggered releases of MLB across platforms?
Well, I kind of look on it, you know, there's a couple of expectations that you would have. First is that this is a game made by the company that owns and created the console, the newest one, you know, that on which it is appearing. So they should have been prepared for it, right? At the same time, I also understand that, you know, Sony San Diego is, you know, we're not talking about, EA Canada. This is not an extremely large studio, and they are working on a single game. And frankly, it may also be like, you know, a one-man job where, you know, yes, two people can sweep up a room, but only one person has the broom. I don't really know what's going on down there. What is plain to see is that they had, in dealing with a split release between PS3 and PS4, they didn't have enough time to get both out feature complete or at parity on the same day. Now, yes, it could be that they go, look, we're releasing three products because obviously the Vita is involved in this, and that will go out on April 1 with the PS3 version. And so they're spreading it out in order to, you know, not cannibalize sales, although, well, I'm not a marketer. I don't really understand. But it would seem to make more sense to have your products going out at different dates on the calendar. At any rate, when they had no competition on the calendar, even nominally, with MLB 2K, they probably realized that it was not going to do any good to break their asses to get the PS3 version out on the first Tuesday of March. And let me work it back another way. If they realized that they were not going to get the PS4 version out on the first Tuesday of March, which sounds rather apparent, why not just take, you know, the extra 3 weeks and you know, have the fig leaf of Major League Baseball's opening day as the reason for its launch date, and give yourself a little bit of extra time with the game that is on the larger installation base, the PS4 sales notwithstanding. This is all a lot of intramural crap, I understand, and it doesn't really relate to the real gamer who goes, wait a minute, I bought a PS4, where the hell is baseball?
Right.
Because I had basketball and I had football and I had soccer on the PS4 when the thing launched. But I do kind of understand those were games that were being built by large third-party operations, the ones that I just mentioned, you know, baseball, football, and soccer. This is still, we forget, it's high quality notwithstanding, this is still a boutique title, and they don't have a lot of people to put on it. So I was a little offended that, you know, we didn't get a clear answer on when the release date was going to be for any platform until so late. But now that it's come, I'm a little bit more forgiving. And obviously, if the game is any good, we'll be a lot more forgiving.
Chris Shanner, the Operation Sports forums exploded with comments, with opinions. Summarize for us. What was the overall state of your site's readers?
I'm pretty sure it's actually very split as far as how this affects their enthusiasm for the game, the initial reaction, how people were. Basically, I mean, it was pretty clear. There was a wide range. Some people were disappointed. Some were very forgiving about it. If you remember, though, the last time we had a console transition, if I remember right, the PS3 version actually launched about a month later over the PS2 version of MLB. So, I mean, this is definitely nothing new. This is their MO, Sony's MO, so it wasn't exactly surprising. We were actually halfway expecting it. Myself and Steve were talking, how late will the PS4 version be? I was hoping it wouldn't be until June, but crap, it may still be until June. But, I think people were just... I think there's some disappointment amongst PS4 fans, just because you could literally be almost... You're going to be, you know, 40, 50 games into the season before people get a PS4 version of this game. And at that point, you know, you're not going to have the same kind of baseball hype. The baseball really, you know, it really comes and goes in waves through the season. And it's really, I think releasing it near opening day is a good call, because that's when baseball is really, you know, there's a lot of hype behind the sport. There's a lot of attention. But man, when you get into May and June, you're just getting into the dog days, where only the most hardcore baseball fans are really hyped up about the sport and the game. So I just think it is what it is. I mean, obviously they needed more time, but I think that people are just, they're ready to see this game in action above all other things.
So Cap Bailey, let's assume for a moment that you're not reviewing MLB for anyone. You are just Cap Bailey consumer. Would you hold off on buying the show on the PS3 and wait for it on the PS4? Are you going PS3 day one for, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 weeks and then upgrading? Like, what are your thoughts, you know, when you heard this and you know, what are you thinking now?
Well, Cap Bailey, the consumer, is absolutely holding off and waiting for the PS4 version. But of course, I'm saying this in February when I'm still kind of excited for baseball. But when May comes along and the Twins are, you know, 10 games under 500 and I'm kind of out on baseball and I'm like, oh, God, stupid sport, how I hate it.
Stanley Cup playoffs are going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, NHL playoffs are coming up. And don't forget Champions League. I'm pretty sure that's in May as well.
And there's a World Cup happening at some point this year as well.
Yeah, so
that'll be June.
Yes, the World Cup's happening in June. So, to my knowledge, May is not a super busy month for gaming.
Hmm.
So there is that.
Right.
And I will be looking for something else to play on my PS4. But, and it is a sports game, but there, I could definitely see a lot of people going, that ship has sailed. I have absolutely no intention of buying the PS3 version. Because I'm just done with getting last gen versions of games at this point. Because while the new versions haven't been a massive upgrade, they've been enough that I haven't really wanted to go back.
Mm.
So despite the fact that you can transfer your saves from the PS3 version to the PS4 version, I may get the Vita version.
You mean you will get the Vita version?
I could see myself playing Road to the Show on the Vita version.
Especially because whatever you do on that Vita version will work on your brand new shiny PS4 version if you choose to get it.
Absolutely.
Sumit Sarkar, your thoughts?
Yeah, the things that Owen and the rest of you guys have brought up obviously make a ton of sense. When you consider putting out 3 SKUs on the same day of a game that, you know, doesn't have a massive audience, I think it makes more business sense whether or not they were behind in development on the PS4 version to delay that one. It also gives them the opportunity to, you know, sort of figure out what kind of upgrade program to offer, if any. Or maybe they'll just stick to the PS3 and Vita thing they did last year. I think it was like you could get both for $80, if I remember correctly. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe they're hoping that that people will buy both, you know, do what they did last fall for Madden and FIFA and NBA 2K. I don't know how many people would do that for MLB. But if you look at what they did with the original reveal last, like, November, I think it was, and now, you know, they led with the PS4 stuff. Specifically, they led with the comparison of the PS4 to the PS3 version of MLB 13, right? You know, they were showing you Jason Worth's high-def beer. They were showing you the green monster rendered with different material types for the scoreboard and the wall itself. So I think that was part of their strategy, you know, to try and make a case for buying both for fans, seeing what's out there with the PS4 version. But now if it's a month off, you know, maybe they're going to want to jump in. I personally will wait, but I mean, unless I'm assigned to review the PS3 version, but I'm in the same boat as Kat in terms of next gen versus old gen.
So I continue to be the freak of the panel because I, as of right now, granted it is mid-February, I plan on getting the PS3 and the Vita versions day one. I presume there will be a bundle. I also assume, and I could be completely wrong, but I assume that there will be something along the lines of what EA did for the Xbox One versions of Madden and FIFA, where there will be a trade-in of like a $10 amount where I can take my PS3 version of the show, 14, and get the PS4 version of the show. And for me, $10 is a perfectly good price to pay for to be able to play the show and be able to bring my experiences forward. I think that's the other big key. If I was not able to bring my guys forward from the PS3 to the PS4, I would be less inclined to do so. But, you know, this would also only be the only year that I could ever see myself doing that because this is the launch game of the PS4. So, you know, I'm excited enough to where I will, and I doubt I'll be doing the review for the game. It's possible. But I'm excited enough to where I'm hoping to take advantage of some deals and play the game. So that's my plan. But let's talk a little bit more about the game in detail. There was a huge set of facts released, a fact sheet about all the new features and aspects of MLB 14 The Show, of which there was a whole laundry list of stuff in there. So let's kind of circle back around. What has you most interested or excited or maybe even concerned about the list of information coming about the show? We'll start with you, Chris Sanner.
Honestly, Rich, as a guy who I'm sure you can appreciate this, who really I don't have as much time as I used to play, I really am looking forward to the quick counts personally. I mean, I want to see how this I want to see how the statistical reality Sony is touting comes to bear. But most likely, if you're touting that, you've got a good idea. You're going to do a good job with it. So I got a feeling quick counts is very intriguing to me. And also just the reworked features and Road to the Show. I'm also interested to see if quick counts is a part of the Road to the Show, because if so, you could literally get through a game in no time if that were the case. So I'm interested in just seeing how fast the show can get through a game of baseball, because I really, really, really want to love this game in the sense that I can play a 162 game season. But we'll see.
Sumit Sarkar, you're a big baseball guy. What's got you most intrigued, interested, or even concerned?
Well, it was good to see the unveiling, whatever you want to call it, of their universal currency as this, you know, reward system called Stubs. Good in the sense that, well, I mean, a tentative, cautiously optimistic, you know, good. It doesn't seem like it's going to be what we feared. But obviously, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that. Otherwise, yeah, I'm really interested to see what they do with Road to the Show. Hopefully I'll be able to get a chance to, like, see it in person before it comes out, but who knows. But, you know, as you guys all know, that's, like, the mode that I play for, you know, any length of time after the review period. Quick Counts is great in general, but for me, I mean, Road to the Show is the main thing I play, and I play as a pitcher, so that won't, like, affect my gameplay length as much. But I think just most of all, I'm really just interested to see the PS4 version in motion. I just, you know, want to see what they've done to step it up, because they were saying some stuff last week about, you know, the limitations that are still present on the PS3 version compared to, you know, how, you know, those numbers are tenfold on PS4 or whatever. And we've seen some teases and such, but that's the big question at this point.
Cap Bailey, what's got you most intrigued, interested, or perhaps concerned?
Two things. First, I am really intrigued by the fact that they say that they're cutting the length of the games like in half, which I considered one of the biggest Achilles heels of the full game experience. I really like a good game of MLB The Show, but it's an exhausting game to play on both sides, because Amen. If you screw up even a little bit, you're either giving up a home run or you're striking out all over the place. You really have to be locked in. So consequently, playing a 162 game season is really just, it's really a bridge too far, you know. and usually the way I would go with it would be I would play one game per season, per series. But even that, you know, I would play a game, it would be like an hour, and I'd be like, oof, okay, I'm gonna take a break. As opposed to, say, FIFA, where it's like 15 minutes, you know, bang, bang, mm-hmm. I finish the game, I'm like, oh, wow, that was a great game. Well, you know, I got some time, maybe I can squeeze in one more game of FIFA. Same with NHL. So what I'm basically saying is that MLB The Show has the Madden disease. But the fact that they're cutting it in half and apparently managing to keep it faithful to the original experience, I really want to see that, especially because I am a career mode person. I like building my teams. I'm not as much of a player creation person. I don't do Road to the Show or Road to Glory or whatever. I would like to be able to build the Twins into a World Series contender. So if they could get that right, I would be very interested. The other thing that interests me is what they're planning for Road to the Show, because MLB The Show is actually the only game where I will play that kind of mode, contrary to what I just said. And what they said that they're going to have a rookie showcase. Okay, that sounds fun. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see that, even if I do horribly and end up getting, you know, and end up going somewhere else, somewhere I don't want to go. And I'm interested to know what they're going to do with the fact that they're taking out the advancement goals, which were always kind of the the way that they keyed moving up through AAA into AAA into the majors, being able to stay up. And the reason I say that is because the advancement's goals have always been a little artificial in my mind. They've always felt like, okay, if I don't meet these occasionally draconian goals, then I'm not going to move into the starting rotation. I'm not going to be able to move into the majors. I may even get demoted. And one of the things I've always found annoying about Roads to the Show is that if you start getting demoted, it can be kind of a death spiral where you just fall apart, you know? So I'm really curious to see how they've changed up that element of the game.
Owen Good, same question to you.
I'll go ahead and echo what everybody else said earlier about I'm going to be interested to see how what mechanisms they have employed to allow you to meaningfully play games but do them more quickly. And I think the reason for that is I think we've all been there with you're a very, very good rookie, and the team will not let you go. You're not going to get free agency after 6 years, and you're just sort of if you're with a bad club, it can be fun to try to build one up. I wrote about that this week. But if you are really playing out the string for a team that isn't going anywhere or you just can't put it together, my God, it can be an incredible grind. And I think that's what grinds a lot of people down. Second thing is, I'm sort of surprised, and I've got to confess, I've been a little bit behind the curve on this, but I'm looking at something on the fact sheet that San Diego sent out, and it's player lock, all platforms.
Mm-hmm.
The new player lock feature, aka Road to the Show Anywhere, gives users the ability to lock on to any single player and enter games using the Road to the Show gameplay mechanic. Is that what I think it is?
Well, if you think it means that you can play a franchise game as a single position player in the field and only his at-bats, yes. If you don't think that's what it is, then no.
Well, then, I mean, that's the reason that I asked is that kind of a modal shift is really, I mean, that's really undersold. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of things that we're talking about here, and they deserve publicity as well. They should. That's really, let's put it this way. I mean, I was talking with somebody on, you know, Twitter, and they were complaining about some guy said, I'm an Xbox 360 player. What baseball game should I get? I said, you should get a PlayStation 3. but I said, you know, MLB 2K was all right. And I thought the pitching was okay. And he complained about the pitching because it had, you know, it was all gesture based and that sort of thing. And I said, well, just create yourself as a hitter and go, you know, play my player. And that sort of was what this speaks to, which is if you don't know how to pitch and you don't care to pitch and all you want to do is hit, you know, this is another area in which, and I've got to hand it to these guys, they know how to make the game exactly the game that you want to play, even if it is just a substrate of the game itself. And they do it authentically. They don't minimize it. They don't make you feel like you're playing less of a game. If you want to automate all the fielding and be nothing but a pitcher in a franchise, you can do that. You know, if you want to be nothing but a designated hitter, you can do that. And I think that this player lock concept is another step in that direction. And so, yes, I'm very interested to see exactly if that really is what I conceive it to be and how far it goes. And that can be something where it's like, you know, you just you get bored in the middle of the season and you want to start inhabiting the persona of, you know, God, I don't know, Troy Tulowitzki or something. And you just do that for 3 weeks. Fine. That's really a value add, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It offers some potentially interesting ways to experience the game differently than you ever have. Because, for example, I'm a Mets fan. The Mets are terrible. They have two or three good players. If I feel like playing opening day as the starting pitcher, who at this point, you know, might even be Bobby Ojeda. I don't even know. But, you know, I can do that. And then in game two, I can be Ike Davis, right? And then in game three, you know, I could be David Wright. Like, you could experience the game. You know, game one is person A, game two is person two, and really sort of get a feel for your team from a very different perspective than having to be every single player through the lineup and everybody who's pitching. And you know, it speaks even more to what you're saying, Kat. It's like by the end of the game, you're exhausted. And I got to tell you, I mean, the interminable amount of time that it takes to go to cycle through to get back to the one or two good hitters on your team, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm now actually the one guy who can hit. I really got to take advantage. Oh, I struck out again. God, like it could potentially really eliminate a lot of that kind of frustration. So I'm with you, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this truly works, you know, because the actual mechanics will be interesting. The other thing that I'm personally really interested in, and this is based solely off of the wildly entertaining time I have had playing in online leagues in the last couple of years, not only our Press Row Madden League, but our NCAA League and you know, the fourth string leagues, is the online franchise. If the online franchise can be executed in a way that it does not demand an extraordinary amount of time, you know, a couple of hours a week, through some combination of scheduling and logistics and all of those kinds of things, that could be a lot of fun. I think there's no denying that, you know, Kat, you're in the league. We're having a blast in our Madden League, and we play a couple of games a week and stuff. And I know they're talking about the way that you can have your virtual self be represented, you know, when somebody else is playing a franchise league game. So, you know, I'm interested and I'm hopeful that the online franchise implementation is going to be fun for somebody who does not have a whole lot of time to dedicate their lives to the show, but wants to have that persistent experience with their friends.
The only problem with the online franchise, they really need to nail down the online, because I'm told that it was better last year, but it's historically been really bad.
Yeah, well, it is by far the biggest thorn in the side of all MLB The Show players across the board, and has been for years.
The other thing is that it's easy to be like, okay, yeah, I'll play 16 games in a season or whatever, but then you get to 162 games,
right? Then that's why
that's a lot of darn games. Yeah, you know,
it'll be interesting. Can you set up your online franchise to be 50 games or 25 games or whatever, like all those different options? Like, will there be a sweet spot for people like us? You know, I don't know. We'll have to find out. And then what is that impact on your rotations and substitutions and injuries? There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into it that you don't really know about. So, but I'm definitely interested to see if it's a viable mode. Don't know if it's going to be viable, but I'm, you know, at least hopeful that it is. And we'll obviously set up a Press Row online franchise and we'll try it out. We'll have some fun. All right. So that is MLB The Show. We got a lot of tweets, a lot of questions this week, so I want to get to a few of those. And I actually did want to also call out a couple of folks who tweeted things that we spoke about, including Scott Binns, who asked us what improvement we're looking forward to most in MLB 14 The Show, which we went through, as well as a couple other folks who were like Chargers Fan 73, who said, why is it taking so long for next gen games to come out? He's disappointed. He has to wait so long for the show. So we talked about both of those things. Another game that recently came out, in fact, came out this week, is NASCAR 14. Came out very much under the radar. I had the opportunity to do the review for Games Radar. It's coming out on the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. It's a current gen game only. I have played several of the NASCAR games in a row since Utechnics, if I'm saying that name correctly, has had the license, because EA had the license for a while but gave it up, and now it's Utechnics are the developers, and I'm frankly not even sure who's publishing it. They may be publishing it as well. Had a chance to play it, review it, and found it to be pretty darn fun. I mean, it's NASCAR, right? So it is got all the tracks and all the licensed drivers and things like that. It is it's really interesting. You know, Owen, you mentioned, you know, in our Titanfall sort of discussion about, you know, how a golf game lets you really sort of discover the intricacies of the course. Golf is the only game that I can sort of draw the parallel to in NASCAR, where each of the tracks in NASCAR has its own very specific feel and very specific way that you attack it. What I find interesting is that you really learn those nuances during practice so that you can qualify with a good title. But once the actual race starts, you have no chance to do anything because you're simply fighting for survival because there's 43 cars and you're all smashing into each other constantly getting into wrecks. So that's been my experience so far with NASCAR 14. It's fun, but boy, it sure is easy to wreck. And once you wreck, you got the yellow flag, and you know you could be 10 seconds in first place, and if there's a wreck, all of a sudden you're right back at the start. So that's what I struggle with. It's certainly a fun game, but it really seems to me like you really need to be a technically solid racer in the races for you to have a whole lot of fun with the game. And Owen, I know you played some NASCAR, and I'm curious if you have some thoughts on this as well.
Well, I mean, it's a solid simulation series. I've not played the latest game. I did play Inside Line and its predecessor, NASCAR the Game. And it's the kind of thing that, I mean, you're entirely correct about sort of that course knowledge. And I think even some racers, you know, talk about, if not in this game, in other games, you know, playing PC simulations of NASCAR courses to, you know, build course familiarity and, you know, where their line should take them. But the real problem is this, you know, a NASCAR race is going to be, you know, 400, 500 miles, which is, you know, however many laps around, you know, whatever trioval that you're racing or even a shorter track. And you can't, when you compress that down into a bite-sized gaming experience, which, I mean, nobody wants to sit there and race for 2.5 hours. On a console or on anything, to be honest, and so it does explode the volatility of racing in traffic, of screwing up when you're drafting, of, you know, making the wrong attempt to pass. I mean, it increases the pressure to make a move and the consequence of doing it incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Where NASCAR, when you watch it on television, I mean, they are constantly talking about they've got a great race going on for fourth and fifth place. And to, you know, a casual viewer, it sounds like the most ridiculous thing in the world. Who cares about fourth or fifth place? It matters a lot in the sprint cup standings, you know, in the middle. Absolutely. In the middle of the season, you know, that's why they have different radio announcing crews at each of the corners, is to tell you what's going on. Because your favorite driver may not win, but my God, he could pick up a lot of points. And that always seems to be missing, especially in any kind of a one-off race with the NASCAR game. And it seems like it's kind of hamstrung by the idea of it is a very technically sound game. And it is hamstrung not only by the controls, because racing with Rich, I don't know. I mean, you play a lot of your stuff on a treadmill, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you're playing with a twin analog controller. I don't think you've got the limited edition Dale Earnhardt Jr. 14-karat gold-plated whatever-the-hell wheel.
And if I did, I wouldn't admit it.
Right, yeah. You know, so it's not something – it is to its credit, very technically accurate. And I would expect no less of a racing title out of your Technics. But it's not something that, you know, that demanding, that is very easy to play with a controller. And then secondly, to really get a NASCAR experience, you have got to go a lot longer than the races call for in this. And a casual fan does not have either the time or the will to put into that. So it really is a niche title that is going to appeal mostly to just an absolute hardcore NASCAR fan who's only game he's playing that day is, by God, we're running at Talladega on the Xbox 360. And I want to thank my M&M's number 75 and Rich Grisham Racing for keeping my car running real good.
I like the sound of that. You know, the other thing too, and I will say this, and you know, I had not reviewed NASCAR games before, and so this was the most time that I had spent with a NASCAR. I mean, I probably put 12, 14 hours into this game. This NASCAR 14, and this is probably the same for Inside Line and the previous ones, which I played, but not nearly as much as I did this one. NASCAR 14 definitely gives you an appreciation for how different these tracks are. I mean, Talladega and Martinsville could not be more different. I mean, there's no real analogy in sports. It's not like, you know, in the NFL, like if you're playing in Seattle, you know, it's 40 yards by 20 yards. And if you go to Dallas, it's 150 yards by 60. Like the fact that these guys are, you got 43 cars jammed into these tiny little tracks in like Martinsville and Bristol, but then these massive wide open tracks at Texas and Daytona, it really is amazing. And it does a great job, you know, really sort of getting that across. The other thing, you know, I set the races at like 10 to 15%, which sounds small, but like, oh, and to your point, I mean, even a 10% or 15% race is like 20 or 30 times around the track, which is a pretty significant investment of time in a single race. You get a real appreciation for how one split second bad decision or mistake can completely ruin you for a race. I mean, there was a point where I had, you know, relatively early on set the difficulty pretty low just because I'm trying to figure out how not to, you know, crash into the sides. And I got, you know, a nice lap ahead of a whole bunch of guys. And I was actually coming around the back of the guy who was in like 42nd place. And, tried to get around him and wrecked, of course, like I do. And all of a sudden, I was right back, you know, in the middle of the pack because of the yellow flag. Like, it's amazing how, you know, for a long period of time, you can do everything right. And then one mistake just ruins it for you. It's crazy. So, Chris Sander, I know you've had some info. You had an interview with the executive producer of NASCAR 14. How is NASCAR 14 resonating with the readers of Operation Sports?
Well, we have a very small but dedicated racing community at OS, and what the guy who does our racing reviews, he's pretty much a genius when it comes to racing, cars, how they're set up, etc. And he's very high on the game. He loves the very deep car customization options. He loves the racing action. So and most people tend to skew in one of two directions, it appears. On one hand, this game is way too deep. It's over their head. They just don't see. They just don't get it. And then there's the other group, which are NASCAR fans, who absolutely love the game, love the settings, love the fact that every track does feel different. Every time you race on a different track, you're going to get a different type of race. And every race, you're going to get a different type of race as well. So it seems like the reaction is generally positive, with the more casual people being a lot more iffy on the game. And I played last year's game, and I kind of fell in the casual fan base where it was kind of like, I see where people who love NASCAR would love this game, but this for the sport to grow or anything like that, that really doesn't really jive with me at all. And I think that's probably what you're seeing again this year.
Cat Bailey, in a racing game world dominated by the Gran Turismos and the Forzas, and, you know, from a sim perspective, which gives you lots of different types of racing to do, and on the arcade side, you know, the need for speeds and things like that, is there a place in the market for a NASCAR game?
Yeah, of course there's a place in the market for a NASCAR game. It's always going to be a really niche product because NASCAR itself is a regional sport. It's a niche product itself. So you got to figure that the kind of people who are going to play NASCAR, that's an even smaller subsection of a pretty small fan base. But if you cater to those people, they're going to be fiercely loyal. They'll buy your product. As long as you keep the overhead low, you can keep the game going for quite a long time. I have no problem whatsoever with there being a NASCAR game coming out every year. And actually, when it went away for a while, I was kind of thinking, gosh, really? They're taking away stock car racing? That's surprising. If anything, though, I'd rather that they had European-style racing because I tend to find that more interesting.
Sumit Sarkar, what would it take to get you to play NASCAR 14?
It would have to not be NASCAR. That's disrespectful. But No, I just you know, there are some sports games I play and will play for which I have very little interest in the sport. You know, I really enjoyed Fight Night. Don't watch boxing at all. Don't have any interest in boxing. I don't follow UFC, I don't follow UFC, but I still am interested in EA Sports UFC. But NASCAR is the one thing that is just beyond my ken. Obviously it's huge. It's, you know, one of the most popular sports in America, but I don't know. I don't get it, and I don't get the appeal of it in a video game. And now, hearing what you guys are saying, I've never looked into it, but hearing what you guys are saying about having to approach the different courses in different ways, you know, that's interesting to me. But in general, for racing, I'm with Kat in the sense of, you know, I like the Gran Turismo style racing of, even if they're ovals. I don't know, that's more interesting to me.
Yeah, when I'm playing a racing game like Gran Turismo, for example, or Need for Speed, I'm often looking at the scenery and I'm thinking, gosh, this is so relaxing. This is nice. I'm on a Sunday drive and there's a cop car. Oh God, run, run, run. Oh, hey, there's a billboard. I can drive through it. Oh, that's pretty sweet. But that's nothing that, in other words, I like arcade racers. Mm. And while I think that a simulation racer is really fascinating, I also don't think that it is quite as intuitive and easy to pick up. For example, Sumit brought up Fight Night earlier. Fight Night is a pretty deep boxing simulator, but ultimately it comes down to punch that guy in the face a lot, which, I mean, you might say, oh yeah, drive a car around in a circle a lot, but there's so much more to that.
And oh yeah.
More often than not.
Yeah.
You're crashing into a wall or something, and you're thinking, I don't get this. What's going on here? I don't know. So I feel like you have to have a grounding in the sport to really appreciate a game like NASCAR, where that's not necessarily the case with definitely Fight Night, probably the other sports games as well.
All right. I got some listener questions here, so let's just jump right into them. Up first is TazDev46. He says, was RBI Baseball really a game that was announced, or was that just a dream? Chris Sanner.
What it was the most epic troll job by Major League Baseball in history to get us all talking for a day. And what they're going to do, they're just never going to release it. You're never going to see it. Just, no, I'm kidding. It's a game. I think the fact that we haven't heard anything about it speaks to the fact that it's probably not going to be a game that's worth sitting around and waiting for, if that makes sense.
It does.
So if this was something serious, I think we would have heard something by now. The fact we haven't, I think, tells us more than – the silence tells us more than we would like, basically.
Sumit Sarkar, you have been impersonating Rachel Nichols. You have been camped out in front of the MLB headquarters in New York City every day waiting for word for RBI Baseball. When are we going to hear something? What's happening?
I wish I knew. I'm trying, but – they're not saying anything. It seemed strange because, you know, like as soon as I got that press release and wrote up that initial story a month ago or however long it was, you know, I emailed whatever PR contact was listed on the press release and he got back to me. And then, you know, we were sort of going back and forth. And he was like, it seemed like they were going to say something about the game beyond asking people on Twitter what their favorite RBI game was. But they haven't. And I'm not quite sure why. Maybe they were waiting for the show's shoe to drop. But yeah, at this point, as you know, Brian and others have said on this show before, all indications point to, you know, RBI, even if it is, you know, like a pretty full-featured product, it probably won't be a direct competitor to the show.
Owen, good. Any reason for positivity or negativity around RBI, or any thoughts at all about the lack of information emanating from Major League Baseball?
Well, I think Major League Baseball obviously wanted to do something to address the fact that it has no title on any Xbox platform. And so it, you know, it put that out as a tide me over. And but, you know, it's going to stay out of the way of Sony's simulation offerings. And so that means we're not going to hear anything about this at least until the end of May. And it will possibly be an all-star break type announcement, somewhat like what? Isn't that when the Bigs came out?
I think so, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it fits the character of what they're talking about. And yes, there is a lot of nostalgia for RBI baseball. I have a lot of nostalgia for RBI baseball, but sure. I have a lot of nostalgia for RBI baseball playing with Wally Joyner, you know, hitting against Don Sutton. And, you know, it's you know, do they have those guys? I mean, if they have those guys, that will be impressive, but that'll take some doing. It'll either take individual licensing or a group license for retired players, which I'm sure they offer. And obviously, if it's a product of Major League Baseball, they have access to it. It's just, do they want to play it? The thing is, when you get down to the mechanics of RBI baseball, I mean, it's almost like Tecmo Bowl throwback, which was that 4 years ago? Was that 2010 or 2011?
It was more than a couple. I know that. I don't exactly know.
And Tecmo Bowl throwback, stripped of not just, you know, the actual NFL teams, but also the actual players, was boring. Its gameplay mechanics are boring. And I'm about to go, you know, I'm going to go to Wisconsin in 3 weeks and play in the de facto national championship tournament for Tecmo Super Bowl, and I'm going to get my ass kicked. Okay. I will not make it out of group play. But the reason that resonates. I mean, yes, it's a lot of nostalgia, and there's a lot of guys who are, you know, mid-30s, and I'm going to be one of the oldest guys there, aren't I? But it's also the players, and it's the recollection, and it's remembering what the NFL was like in 1991. That is what RBI baseball is. It's remembering what Major League Baseball was in 1987. You know, it was the playoff teams from 1986 plus all-stars. You know, like John Kruk was in that roster, for unless Major League Baseball is going to deliver that. I mean, this is going to be a tide me over arcade title that is, you know, nice and is kind of a plant the flag. But again, it is nothing. I don't think it's going to be really anything to jump up and down about.
All right. Up next, a question from Jerry May 99 says, no World Cup on next gen means no deal for me. You. So Cat Bailey, that question is for you. What's your thought about the World Cup game only coming out on current gen systems?
I am completely in the same boat. No World Cup for next gen means no World Cup for me, because I have already sold my copy of the Xbox 360 version of FIFA. Mm. I am out on current gen sports games for the most part, and I'm not going to go pick up an old copy of FIFA just to play it. Now, I can understand why they went that direction in a couple of ways. I mean, there are a lot of people who still haven't gone to next gen, and maybe they held off on getting FIFA, and usually the World Cup version is really good, like even better than the previous version. And by all accounts, their last experiment with the Europa League expansion pack in FIFA 12 did not go very well at all. And so I can see why they did it, but I really hate it as a fan, because I was really looking forward to the World Cup expansion pack kind of revitalizing my interest in FIFA and getting me back into it after I had kind of put it down for a little bit. And now that's not going to happen.
Sumit Sarkar, same question to you.
Yeah, it's disappointing, certainly, because, as I've said in this show, after playing FIFA on PS4, I wasn't going to go back. And at the same time, it's not surprising at all that they chose to do it this way, And I was actually surprised that they gave as much of an explanation as they did. You know, you should just say no comment or something like that. But you know, basically, that they acknowledge the main reason is the install base, right? I mean, this is a game that's developed at EA Canada, developed by, you know, as far as we know, you know, the same basic team that's making the regular annual release of the FIFA. So they've got to have some fork. They've got a fork of the team for this. They've got to dedicate a good amount of resources to this product. And so it makes sense for them to release it on platforms where they have a, you know, total install base of like, what, 160 million PS3s and 360s worldwide? I think something like that. Compared to, you know, whatever it is, 10, 11 million for PS4 and Xbox One worldwide so far. That's the main reason, right? And then, of course, there is the reason that it is a $60 game and not just DLC for FIFA, which is that it's a game where once every 4 years, they can get a lot of interest from casuals, from people who may not buy FIFA every year, but, oh, the World Cup's around, it's on TV at every bar I go to during the month of June? Sure, why not? There's this on the shelves? It looks newer than this other FIFA game with a number at the end of it. Yeah, sure, why not? World Cup, I like, yeah, go Team USA. So it obviously totally makes sense for a number of reasons from a business perspective for EA. I wasn't surprised at all to see it only on last gen.
Chris Sanner, the Operation Sports community, I'm sure had quite a lot to say about World Cup only coming out on the current gen systems or previous gen or whatever the heck we're calling these things. What was going on over at OS when this announcement came out?
I'm calling it Zombie Gen. I don't know why. That's probably going to stick somewhere, I swear. But I just came up with that off the top of my head. But anyways, OS is basically the same kind of really kind of spread here. A lot of people, I guess 40% in a recent poll, are almost 40%, are going to actually skip this game because it's not next gen. Literally, that's the reason they gave for it in the poll. And, you know, another, you know, 15, 20% or so just aren't interested in the game. And then there's about 20% who are going to buy the game. And, you know, so there's an audience there, but it's not the full FIFA audience who are going to get this game. So I don't know if EA made a mistake with that. I know personally I have bought every World Cup game because I'm a sucker. But I absolutely love the World Cup and I love the games. The presentation's always really good in the World Cup games. I mean, it's always just fantastic. And with the ability, I know like back World Cup 98, there was actually two games. I just dated myself completely, but there was like a Road to the World Cup 98 and then World Cup 98. And I bought both of those games. But now, I mean, I guess just the old guy in me, I really love the fact you can play as all 203 international teams. I can take literally Trinidad to the World Cup or insert minor country here that you've never heard of and take them to the World Cup.
Canada.
Rich, they don't play soccer.
I love Canada. I'm just kidding.
But no, yeah, they. I mean, it's really cool to have that option. And I mean, there's more teams in this game than were in NCAA football. I mean, 203 teams, that's a lot of teams. And I guess 7,500 licensed players. So it's really cool to see that kind of effort and that kind of work go into this. And I'm really excited to play it myself personally, even though it is last gen. I'm going to kind of stick my nose up and maybe I might set a few feet further back from the TV and pretend it's next gen.
All right, last question of the evening. And I think, I don't know, but I think this was inspired by at least one, if not two things. When I saw it, I immediately thought of Owen, your column this week, your stick jockey column, where you say that based on some conversations with Josh Lumen, one of the guys who heads up CFM, connected franchise at Madden, that a lot of people sort of or at least a statistically significant amount of people play Madden franchises as downtrodden teams to see if they can't, you know, finally live a little glory for the franchise. But it's also might be based upon the rather interesting and funny Breaking Madden series, which some of you may be familiar with. But the question is, what unconventional way do you play a sports game, a.k.a. replace an entire team with rookies? And this comes from Sean Widmer. And I got to thinking, I've already pointed out several times that I'm a little strange, but I don't recall ever purposely playing a game in an unconventional way, certainly not recently. I for whatever reason, I tend to try to play everything straight up. I mean, not only do I try to play everything straight up, I actually, even in the franchises that I'm in, I tend to not mess around with the rosters or make crazy trades or purposely alter the lineup so that I have, you know, guys playing in the wrong position or anything like that. So I don't know what that is about me that doesn't do that, but I don't really have that. I don't put a center at the starting tailback or anything like that. So, Owen, I'll direct that first in your direction.
I don't do anything to the. I mean, and Breaking Madden is a fantastic series, and that's just it's a funny series. I mean, obviously it's comedy, but it's really kind of thoughtful in how he goes about figuring out, you know, in what way is he going to completely pervert the game of American football. And it shows you, it's a game that's sort of believed to be very rigid and orthodox. And when you see it played in a completely unorthodox way, it actually teaches you something about how balanced the sport is overall. Now, that aside, when I do unorthodox things, I mean, I have played the PGA Tour as a woman. You know, that's pretty unorthodox to my mind. I have... I will consistently create in my NCAA dynasties a middle linebacker who also is a fullback, and make sure that he has enough stamina to play both ways. That's really unconventional because you don't see 60-minute guys, you know, on both sides of the football in that way. I will, you know, obviously. Oh, I will create older players in career modes, especially in baseball.
Yeah.
And sort of it will be, you know, kind of the rookie scenario, which is, you know, here is a 33-year-old guy. He was picking garbage in New Britain, Connecticut. And, oh, the Rock Cats had a tryout. And now he's in, you know, the Twins farm system. No offense, Cat. But are they – is it New Britain –
I'm impressed that you know that. Good job. Okay.
I've played that so much. I just wanted to be sure they were still signed on. Those are the unorthodox ways in which I play, you know, sports video games. But Rich, to your point, I sort of feel like if I have spent that much money, you know, to get a simulation video game, the reason I've bought it is to sort of inhabit that simulation fantasy, which is not that I am 7 feet tall and 300 pounds and playing quarterback,
right?
But that I am behaving like an actual NFL quarterback against actual NFL teams. So I don't, when it comes to career modes, with the exception of the quirks or the things that would be kind of like, you know, narrative anomalies, I don't deviate that much.
Cat Bailey, how about you?
I find it interesting that you kind of do it as almost an extended version of wish fulfillment, Owen, where you're kind of creating these stories. I think that's really cool. As for me, I'm a sim player. I treat these games as my own personal form of wish fulfillment. So oftentimes I will pick a team that I really like and I will try to take them to the championship, which is kind of, you know, what they're designed for. I think the closest way things that I do that are unorthodox, really that aren't that unorthodox at all. For example, I'll spend a lot of time tweaking the roster so that I can have my online franchise team offline so that I can play with it. So I'll be dropping all of guys like Jared Cook onto the Bills or whatever. And the other thing I'll do is I'll download rosters with historical players. Like, for example, I have a roster where somebody created like Fran Tarkenton and things like that. Because I want more than anything for EA to go out and put historical teams into Madden. And that's as close as I'm ever going to get.
Mm.
So, but I do appreciate Breaking Madden for what it is. It is damn funny to watch.
Indeed. Chris Sanner, how about you?
There was a time back in the heyday of my creative genius time. I don't know, actually. But anyways, I actually created a team in NBA 2K. I think it was 2K11. And I basically had them all named Muggsy Bogues. Just added like a first, second, or third. And I literally had a team full of Muggsy Bogues.
Oh, yeah. Players.
5 foot. I guess 5'3" is what his official height was. I don't remember if I could get a guy that short or not in the game.
5'3" dunkers, though, too.
Yeah, I know. And I literally had a team full of Muggsy Bogues. And I don't know. I mean, it was actually kind of funny to try to play against a team like back in those days, Los Angeles, which had a really good front court. And you're trying, you know, you got a 5'3" guy trying to guard Andrew Bynum when Bynum played basketball. But, you know, just imagine the possibilities of what could happen. Dwight Howard guarding a Muggsy Bogues the 7th. Which, by the way, if I remember right, Muggsy Bogues the 7th had a really mean 3-point shot. But, I mean, it was really fun to actually come up with a bunch of with that and to play around with it. And that was a really fun time. But I don't know. It's just. That was probably my most recent. It seems like the one thing I do have to say this I am lamenting is that sports games are getting away from that kind of customization and allowing that sort of thing. Because honestly, some of my more fun moments in sports gaming have been coming up with crazy harebrained ideas. And the fact we're not able to edit rosters and such, you know, in some games, it really does take away a little bit of the fun of being able to do some crazy things like that.
Well, all right, ladies and gentlemen, is our show. But before we go, real quick, submit Sarkar, as of the release of this episode on the 21st, there are how many days left to go check out your curated series of Madden video games?
Well, this will be out on Friday, so 2 days. That's it. It'll just be Sunday, the 23rd of February. That's the last day where you can go see that Madden NFL 25 years in running exhibit at the Museum of the Moving Image in Astoria, which is in Queens, which is one of the 5 boroughs of the city of New York. So if you're around, please check it out. I think, as I said last time, they're open pretty late for a museum on the weekends, like until 7, I think, on Saturday and Sunday. So it's been great so far. It's been gotten a great response, and certainly anyone who does check it out, I appreciate it. So yeah.
Well, now wait a second. I thought the 5 boroughs in New York were Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and then Jersey City and Hoboken.
Don't forget the great borough of East Rutherford. Come on. All right, but thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. As always, my thanks to the great panel. Before we close, I do want to mention that we do have a panel. The Press Row Podcast will be at PAX East this year, 2014, Friday, April 11th at 1:30 in Bumblebee, I believe is the name of the theater. We will be having our panel entitled The Crisis in Sports Games. Lots of great folks are going to be there. Including our own Sumit Sarkar, including Kat Bailey, as well as some other special guests, including TJ Larriman, that sports gamer. We are hoping that the estimable Mr. Owen Good will be able to somehow make the trip up, but if not, perhaps we will still have him virtually. But whatever you do, if you are going to PAX East, please come see us on Friday, April 11th at 1:30 for our panel, where I'm very excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be great to be able to interact with all the listeners. We had a wonderful turnout last year, and the feedback so far is that we're expecting an even better one. So very excited. So as always, for Chris Sander from Operation Sports, Kat Bailey from U.S. Gamer and many other publications, or Owen Good from Kotaku, and Smit Sarkar from Polygon. I'm Rich Grisham from Games Radar and OXM and At Gamer and the Press Row Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. There are several ways to make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to it on iTunes, subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio, look for it on your favorite podcast app, follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast, or just read Operation Sports every day. No matter which way you get it, please rate and review it and comment on it while you're there, too. That helps us keep the show going. And make sure you follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follow: Operation Sports, Chris Sander at Chris_SNR, Kotaku's Owen Good at Owen Good, Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS, Pasta Padre's Brian Weedy at Pasta Padre, and me, your host, Richard Grisham at Rich Grisham, and of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. As always, it's a thrill to bring the Press Row Podcast to life every time we can, and we couldn't do it without the great people at Operation Sports or you, our listeners. Thanks, and we'll see you again really soon.